ali ali Srimad Bhagavatam ki Gaur Premanand. Canto 7, Chapter 1, Text 26. Did you read?
No, I didn't get the text.
You didn't read. I did. We're going to share a little bit. Remember our discussion the day before yesterday and then again yesterday about the weaver. And the weaver became a recipient of very special mercy from Krishna simply because of hearing about Krishna. But after hearing about Krishna, he absorbed his thought and concentration on Krishna, hoping the day would come. come and he would be able to see Krishna, but he was afraid of going to Braja, like some of his friends had gone to Braja, because he was afraid of Kamsa. But he wasn't meditating on Kamsa in fear, he was meditating on Krishna with attraction. So the Bhagavatam says Krishna blessed him with different blessings, that he would attain a form like Krishna's. It sounded like, you know, the way the Bhagavatam says it is after this life, and then during this life, this and that and the other opulences, you know, worldly opulences. Jiva Goswami writes in Gopal Champu that Krishna simply glanced upon him and his body became transformed right on the spot with a spiritual body with opulences, invested with opulences like Krishna. So that's, you know, somebody wrote a letter to me yesterday or day before. Could I give some example of someone that achieved opulences like the Lord? So I gave a very simple answer saying, those who are situated in Vaikuntha, they have opulences like the Lord. They have forms like the Lord, and they have opulences like the Lord. But here's one, according to Jiva Goswami, the weaver attained opulences right there in Mathura. And then there was that verse that said, Jiva Goswami made reference to an oil bug being trapped by a wasp, meditated on the wasp and developed features like the wasp or qualities like the wasp, and in his next life it changed the form of a wasp. And then the statement was made, Madhukanta is the speaker of Gopal Champu. Madhukanta is something like a bard or a singer, and he's introduced at the very beginning of Gopal Champu. He had a twin brother, Snigdhakanta and Madhukanta. Anyway, so Madhukanta is saying these things, that what to speak if one, like the oil bug meditates on the wasp and becomes a wasp next life. What to speak if one, you know, instead of out of fear of the wasp, meditating on the wasp, but if out of love, one is constantly engaged in remembrance, what good fortune will come to that person? One will certainly, if Krishna is the object of one's constant meditation, one will achieve Krishna's association and form and opulences and spiritual destination, even in this lifetime. So then we read, that was 2 days ago and yesterday, this little reference, what happened with the weaver according to the Bhagavatam. And then there's a verse from Canto 11, where Krishna says the same thing by constant meditation. So then we had this discussion yesterday about if one meditates upon fear or enmity, then hey, who needs to be a devotee? You can just do that and get the same result. And or similar result, or if not, the same result. So I'm going to read from, there's a whole section the whole canto, read carefully the beginning portions of a canto because it sets the tone or the subject matter for the whole canto. So, without other examples, in this canto it's Shishupal's deliverance. And so it's the function has to do with the power of Krishna's name. And similarly, meditation upon Krishna. But how did such a wicked person, evil person, malicious person, offensive person achieve liberation? That was like, how did that happen? Could you explain? So the importance of Krishna appearing in this world and the importance of the appearance of Krishna's name in this world and the propagation of Krishna's name in this world is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift, which is the application point of Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 6 starts like that, Canto 7 starts like that. And then the rest of the canto is just embellishing or expanding on that key message. So how did Shishupal achieve what he achieved was the question. And Narada responds, therefore, text 26, canto 7, chapter 1, by enmity or by devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desire, by all of these or any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or other concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same, almost. For the Lord, because of his blissful position, is never affected by enmity or friendship. And now, your question. From this verse, one should not conclude that because Krishna is unaffected by favorable prayers or unfavorable blasphemy, one should therefore blaspheme. Shortcut. This is not the regular principle. Bhakti yoga means anukulina Krishna anushilanam, colon. One should serve Krishna very favorably. This is the real injunction. Here it is said that although an enemy thinks of Krishna unfavorably, the Lord is unaffected by such anti-devotional service. Thus, he offers his benedictions even to Shishupal and similarly inimical conditioned souls. Again, this does not mean, however, that one should be inimical toward the Lord. The stress is given to the favorable execution of devotional service, not purposeful blasphemy. Then some text about what happens when you hear blasphemy. Shishupal's achievement of oneness with the Supreme Lord was different because Jain Vijay, so that connection. From the very beginning of their lives, they thought of Lord Krishna as an enemy. And even though blaspheming Lord Krishna, they chanted the holy name Krishna constantly, along with their inimical thoughts. Thus they were purified because of chanting the holy name of Krishna. It is to be understood that even a blasphemer can be freed from sinful activities by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Certainly, therefore, freedom is assured for a devotee who is always favorable to the service of the Lord. This will be clear in the following verse. We'll read the following verse. By rapt attention fixed upon Krishna, one is purified, and thus one is delivered from material life. Then next paragraph is Vishwanath saying fear. The gopis also had fear when they were called by Krishna's flute in the dead of night. They had fear of reprimand from society and family and people, but they went anyways, despite their fear. One should not mistakenly think that Lord Krishna must be worshipped by an inimical attitude. He goes over the scriptural injunctions again. One should not try to worship Krishna unfavorably, otherwise he must be punished, at least for one life, to be purified. One should not try to be killed by embracing an enemy, a tiger or a snake. One should not blaspheme the Supreme Lord and become his enemy in order to be put into hellish life. Paragraph. The purpose of this verse is to emphasize that even the enemy of the Lord can be delivered, not to speak of his friend. Madhvacharya says, when blasphemed, one will go to hell, and so forth. In the last paragraph, the conclusion is that one should not give up pure devotional service for one's own benefit. One should not imitate Hiranyakashipu or Shishupal. This is not the way to achieve success. Then 27, interesting, Narada Muni continued. By devotional service, one cannot achieve such intense absorption in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one can through enmity toward him. That's my opinion. Purport. Sriman Narada Muni, the topmost pure devotee, praises Krishna's enemies, like Shishupal, because their minds are constantly completely absorbed in Krishna. Indeed, he thinks himself deficient in the inspiration of being feelingly absorbed in Krishna consciousness. This does not mean, however, that the enemies of Krishna are more elevated. And it goes on. So it's a long purport. The essential point in this connection is that one should be fully absorbed in thoughts of Krishna 24 hours daily, etc. So here's another. This is 28. This is a grass worm confined in a hole of a wall by a bee. Always thinks of the bee in fear and enmity, and later becomes a bee because of such remembrance. This is Canto 7, Chapter 1, and we read something from Canto 11. Similarly, if conditioned souls somehow or other think of Krishna, who is Satchit Ananda Vigraha, they will become free from their sins. Whether thinking of him as their worshipable Lord or an enemy, because of constantly thinking of him, they will regain their spiritual bodies. And maybe now you'll want to read some more about all that.
Very, very nice. Thank you.
Okay. So now we're continuing. Canto 10, Chapter 34, Texts 12 and 13. So the Vidyadhara is speaking. Although it says Sarpa Vacha, the serpent said, he's in his Vidyadhara form, but it's Sarpa Vacha. Oh, the devotee that asked the question yesterday about Angirasa and Angira Muni, it's touched on here.
Huh? Pranahari Prabhu asked that question.
Yeah, he's not here.
He's cooking.
Cooking. Good for him.
For deity.
Huh?
For deity.
Fantastic. And we're cooking topics of Krishna for offering to Krishna. So you can ask him to check out texts 11 to 12 and 13 from this chapter 34. because it's mentioned. So right in the Sanskrit. An girasa. In the first line of text 13, Rishin, that's plural, Rishin, Virupa is deformed, bad bodies, Virupa, Angirasaha. Is translated here as of the disciplic succession of Angira Muni. And another word in the verse is Tair, T-A-I-H, in the Sanskrit is Tair, Imam, Prapitaha, Tire Imam Prapitaha. These sages made me, Vidyadhara, to assume this serpent form. Translation. The serpent replied, I am the well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshana. I was very opulent and beautiful. And I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplane. Once I saw some homely sages, Virupa, of the lineage of Angira Muni. Proud of my beauty, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin, they made me assume this lowly form. Vishwanath, there's no BBT commentary. Vishwanath writes, I was a well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshana. I used to move around here and there for amusement in my airplane. As a result of my sin, I received birth as a snake by the rishis who I had laughed at. Now the next verse says is they cursed him. First. So Jiva Goswami writes, by the touch of the Lord, he also developed bhakti. This is indicated by his words. He is still called the snake, Sarpa Uvacha, because his present body was simply a transformation of the snake body. With humility, he says, I was known as a Vidyadhara named Sudarshana. I was endowed with wealth of beauty, with a wealth of beauty in my form. I would wander about in my airplane for fun. I mocked some sages of Angirasa's line who had deformed bodies because of austerities. I attained this snake body because of my sins. Now, because of his sins or because of the curse. And you know, they didn't have to get cursed to have reactions to sins. Thus, the sages were not at fault. So he's laying emphasis. Jiva Goswami is laying emphasis on, it's the sin, it's not the curse. The curse followed the sin, but it's because of the sin. And therefore, the sages were not at fault. Sanatan Goswami, I was some Vidyadhara. This shows his humility and also indicates he was the best Vidyadhara. His name was Su Darshana, pleasant to see, is the meaning of his name. Su Darshana. Indicating that he had a beautiful form, with a wealth of beauty and glory I would travel about. I was endowed with beauty because of many features of my form. I would wander here and there for play. The sages of Angira's lineage were naturally deformed, and because of austerity, they had become thin. Proud of my beauty, I mocked them by laughing loudly. They did not become angry. They were not at fault. It was his sin, or my sin. Now, another key word to next text 14 is shapaha. Shapaha is the curse. It was actually for my benefit that those merciful sages cursed me, since now I have been touched by the foot of the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds and have thus been relieved of all inauspiciousness. Vishwanath, because of this curse, I have been touched by your foot and been relieved of the curse. Jiva Goswami, ah, what can be said of the power of saintly people? Because of that, my wicked act became the highest blessing. The sages were most merciful because they did not become disturbed by my offense. They were interested in delivering fallen persons. It is understood that they said, quote, in the future you will receive the highest auspiciousness by being touched by Krishna's lotus foot. Thus, the curse was for giving mercy. I would be touched by the foot of the Lord of the universe, Loka Guru Na, a person hard to attain. Sanatana Goswami writes, ah, what can be said of the power of saintly persons? Because of my wicked act, because of that, that's the power of saintly persons, my wicked act became the highest blessing. The sages were most merciful because they did not become disturbed by my offense. They were interested in delivering fallen persons. It is understood that they said, in the future, you'll be born in Mathura area. So, as far as Sanatana Goswami, of the two options of where this Vidyadhara, the Ambikavana is, it's in the Mathura district because the snake isn't going to take a walk all the way over to Gujarat. In the future, you'll be born in Mathura area and will receive the highest auspiciousness by being touched by Krishna's lotus foot, unquote. Otherwise, you could never attain such good fortune. The curse was for giving mercy. Paragraph. I was touched by the foot of the best person amongst all jivas in all planets. Well, Krishna is not a jiva. Or, I was touched by the foot which is worshipped as supreme by all the worlds. He does not directly say, quote, your foot, out of great respect. All sins were destroyed by the touch or by seeing him. Or even by being touched, I am not freed of sin. He says this out of humility, having been completely freed of the curse. So I'll read one more, text 15. My Lord, you destroy all fear for those who, fearing this material world, take shelter of you. By the touch of your feet, I am now freed from the curse of the sages. O destroyer of distress, please let me return to my planet. Huh? Why does he want to go back there? We'll hear. Purport. According to the Acharyas, the word apriche indicates that Sudarshan humbly requested the Lord for permission to return to his abode, where he might take up his duties again, certainly in a chastened state of mind. So apriche, and the word for word is I request permission. Vishwanath writes, I am praying for the order to go to my own abode, apriche yache, O destroyer of suffering, amiva hum. Jiva Goswami writes, why do you ask to return to your planet and not ask for liberation? Answer, you destroy the fear of those who, because of fear of material existence, surrender to you even in their minds, but by being touched by your foot, I've attained the highest bhakti. Liberation is automatically achieved. Similar to Nalakovira and Manigriva, when they were liberated, they went back to their place, but they're now pure devotees, they can serve anywhere. Sanatana Goswami. This is the last. I bid farewell, apriche, to you, Tva, the greatest deliverer. Question, why do you ask permission to go to your planet? Why do you not ask for liberation? Answer, you completely destroy the fear of those who are surrendered because they fear material existence. What then is the question of fear of material existence? For us devotees, who are by nature sattvika, by serving you with music, that's one of the things apparently that vidyadharas do, we attain happiness greater than liberation. I have no suffering or offense at all since I have been touched by your foot. You are the destroyer of all suffering at the root. Now, most likely we wouldn't have picked up on that subtlety in the course of just reading Krishna book or the Bhagavatam verses. Some people just like reading the verses. And, you know, like chapter a day, it's just read the verses. You familiar with that program? Go here. Vaisheshika Prabhu started a program, Chad.
Yeah.
Chapter a day.
Chapter a day.
So it's the intention is to get people in the habit of reading, and so it's just, you know, reading the verses, and you read the verses and read the verses and read the verses, and it's certainly purifying just to read the verses. Then you get in the habit of reading, and then, you know, a little light goes on that says, I'd like to understand that verse. If it's done regularly, then you read the verse and the purports and so on, and so on. So here's a little Prabhupada story, two Prabhupada stories about verses, about purports. Long ago, 50 years ago, I was bhakta in the Boston Temple. And following Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada wanted a printing press. So he arranged for the devotees in Boston to buy a printing press and went in the back room. And it was very practical because that building that we had a loading dock for some reason, like a single family residence, but had a loading dock in the back. So they could bring the paper in on skids and, you know, take it inside to where the printing press was, etc. So the devotee at the time, who was in charge of the press, was named Advaita. If you've seen the Hare Krishna movie, there's a particular session where there's somebody with really bright red hair and not wearing a shirt or t-shirt even, is playing harmonium in that film, Hare Krishna movie. That's Advaita. So he shared this with me, that he asked Prabhupada, is it okay to print a Bhagavad Gita that's like literally the size that fits in your pocket, so during the course of the day you can just pull it out and then recite some verses and then put it back in your pocket and get, you know, absorbed in the verses, which sounded like a nice idea. Prabhupada said no. And his answer, explanation why, is that the differences between one Bhagavad Gita translation is not so much in the verses, but it's in the commentary. And without reading the commentary, they'll not understand the verses. So the answer was no. Now, since then, I believe they printed such a book. And I don't know what the rationale behind it is, but they did it. And I was telling the story once in a class in Italy that Lakshmi Moni was attending. And, you know, she said, Prabhupada said the same thing with regard to the children. Because the first Gurukul was in Dallas, and she was involved in the Gurukul in Dallas. Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, and he came to visit Dallas. They had newly acquired temple and Radhakala Chanji and everything. So he visited, and of course the teachers were really enthusiastic to have the children prepared to recite Bhagavad Gita slokas for Prabhupada, for his pleasure. And he, you know, smiled, but then afterwards told the teachers, this is not required. Because without understanding the meaning, then that's not what I'm looking for. I mean, I don't know what the rest of what he said was, but, you know, they should learn the meaning. The meaning is more important than just reciting the verses. So we're deeply indebted to our founder Acharya and the predecessor Acharyas for explaining, because otherwise we wouldn't understand. Or, say it stronger, we'd have a wrong understanding. Or say it stronger, all the other versions are leading people into the wrong understanding of different varieties and categories of wrong understanding, so that, you know, the whole thing is lost. Although they're certainly circling back, there's no harm in reciting Bhagavad Gita slokas. There's no harm in reciting Bhagavad Gita slokas. But one who's engaged in teaching, just like what Vaisheshya Prabhu was doing, getting people involved in hearing and remembering and reciting Prabhupada's books, so that you can go to the next. Just keep in mind where the train is going when you get on. Okay, so that's discussion. See if there's some questions, comments, anything.
I got this one question. Normally, we find that male is in a proud of his idealism.